Well, hello, everyone, and welcome into another episode of Speedway Soccer Live. I'm excited to be with you guys tonight. I am Ben Wright, hosting in the absence of Davey Shepherd, and I'm joined tonight by Jonathan Slape and Lucas Panzica. Guys, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well, man. Doing well.
Doing well. Looking forward to Friday. Feels like it's been ages since we've seen this team on the field.
Yeah, 2 weeks in 2020 feels like 2 months.
Yeah.
Tonight we're going to talk about Inter Miami, the Nashville match coming up. About 5 minutes before we came on, news broke that Miami are going to be without five players tomorrow. Three starters and two other players on the squad have tested positive for COVID-19 and have not traveled to Nashville. We don't know who those players are yet, and it's still a developing story. Just coming out, like I said, within the last 5 minutes, but. Definitely not the news that you want to be talking about before a game like this. I'll be interested to see how it affects the game. I imagine that they'll do more testing tomorrow and see if the game proceeds as planned. I think as of now, it's on. Guys, just initial reactions. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess first of all, you know, shout out to Franco Panizo over there at Soccer by Ivis who broke the story. But I mean, it's just a terrible situation. I mean, we've seen Nashville SC deal with an outbreak and miss out on MLS's back. We've seen what's happened with the Titans and how quickly that spread. So I think, you know, before we even talk about the soccer implications, you know, our thoughts are with those guys and hopefully it's nothing too serious, but it's just kind of the reality of, you know, a post-pandemic world. Davey brought up something that I thought was pretty interesting, not interesting, that I agree with is, you know, why wasn't this tournament? Why not just go back to Orlando and make this a back in the bubble?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all had that same thought with cases rising all over the country. I mean, I think MLS has wanted to play in home market as much as possible, especially now that fans are being allowed back. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. And I think just as situations like this arise, it's going to become even more pertinent. Lucas, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, well, Kobe Price of the Sun Sentinel, Ben, you retweeted, reported that at least three starters did not even travel, won't be available for tomorrow. So that really changes the whole complexion of things, right? If you're Gary Smith, and right now you're just as much in the dark as anybody else. Hopefully we'll find out more tomorrow, but you hope the game will be played because there's a lot of eyes on this game. A battle of two expansion teams that took completely different approaches to their inaugural seasons in MLS and who's going to get the better of who. So I really hope the game is played, but just intriguing to see how Nashville approaches this now with just from a preparation standpoint of the night before a game, having no idea who may or may not be out there for Miami.
Sorry, Salib, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, and we've seen some reporting from Jeff Carlisle yesterday, and then, you know, some more stuff that came out yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday morning, yesterday afternoon about, you know, there will be instances where if a team has to forfeit, it'll be the team that has an outbreak. So, which is just a terrible way to see a team advance in the playoffs. I agree, Lucas. I'm really looking forward to this game. I mean, it's been 2.5, almost 3 months since these two teams have faced each other, and they are completely different than those teams that played each other back at the beginning of September. So I was looking forward to seeing that, but looks like that could not happen.
And it's important to note too, in that Jeff Carlisle article, he said that MLS their first option would be to try to reschedule. Obviously that's tough when you're in a condensed schedule, and it's even more difficult in this round when the winner would be playing on Tuesday night. So there's just, you can maybe delay it a day, but with a disease like COVID, where it's such a long incubation period, that doesn't really accomplish that much. So, I mean, it's hard to see how rescheduling will help. So yeah, I mean, like we said, it's a developing story. Initially just got the news a few minutes ago, and we'll see what happens going forward. We'll talk a little bit more about that game here in a bit. We have an interview with Joe Lowry from the MLS Assist podcast coming up. So we'll talk with him a little bit about the game, and then we'll break that down more and take your questions on that game after our interview with him. We also had a U.S. national team game for the first time in, what was it, 8 or 9 months, which feels like years in COVID time. And guys, the U.S. national team is almost fun to watch again. It feels weird saying that, but like, I'm actually excited about this team. What is going on?
Yeah, real quick before we dive in, Donald Hall in the chat wanting to know if there's any truth to the rumor that Inter Miami's scared to play because it will confirms they're the worst expansion team. Cincinnati would like a word with that. It's the only thing that they'll ever get. But no, talking about U.S. national team, I mean, yeah, this team is fun to watch. I mean, even that Wales game where it was a 0-0 draw, there were still a lot of things to be excited about. I mean, I know the biggest storylines are, of course, Yunus Musa and Giovanni Reyna and those guys getting their first appearance. But I mean, I think for me, one of the big things was seeing the likes of Weston McKennie, who I feel is the captain of this team. If you listen to him in post game interviews, listen to, in the little bit of behind the scenes that we get of them in training. This is a guy that is the leader. And I've always been a big fan of McKennie's game, and just seeing him step up and take that leadership role, just makes me even more excited.
Yeah. It's more optimism than I can remember in a very long time with US, and maybe has something to do with how young the team is, but there's such a youthful chemistry to them. And the fact that not a single MLS player was there for those two matches against Wales and Panama. And it still kind of brings you that excitement of what you hope is kind of the golden age of U.S. soccer. I mean, that the game against Panama, you saw moments where it was sloppy, probably let a bad team hang around for a little too long. But at the end of the day, with the final result, it was a good team just taking care of a bad team in CONCACAF. So that's what you want to see moving forward. And the youth makes it that much more exciting. I'm as excited as I think I've ever been for the U.S. national team. Maybe it's recency bias, but just because of how young the team is and the positions that they already are in their careers in Europe, I mean, there's no reason to not be excited.
We did have Sebastian Legette there, though, who is there from the Galaxy. So we did have one MLS guy.
Okay, but one.
I will say that, I mean, if Giassi Zardes or Jozy Altidore were there for that game, that Wales game, there would have been goals, and I mean probably double the amount of goals against Panama. I know a lot of people have been really excited and really quick to write off the MLS guys and say like, oh, let's go forward, like that's never bringing any MLS players. But especially with the depth at striker, Josh Sargent isn't scoring goals. Seeing Nico Giacchini score, but I mean, if a guy like, Jozy Altidore, Giassi Zardes, even potentially a Daryl DK, I'll preface that a little bit knowing that he has yet to play with this team. There are options in MLS. And then at the defensive positions, I would argue that outside of John Brooks, our best center backs are in MLS.
Yeah. I mean, so like that was going to kind of be my next question. Obviously it was almost completely, based out of Europe squad, but I think there are some spots up there for grabs. And I think we're going to see some MLS players obviously in the squad, but fighting for those starting spots. Off the top of your head, who do you think you already talked about some of the forwards, but who outside of those guys are some players that you think could push their way into starting 11 contention?
I mean, the first guys that I think of are, Jordan Morris out on the wing, who, I mean, there's not an American player that has scored as much in the past 3 years on a consistent basis than Jordan Morris. I'm not the biggest Jordan Morris fan, but he is, contributing, and he's backing up that up with stats. But then I'm looking at, Walker Zimmerman, Mark McKenzie, Aaron Long, those guys at the center back positions, who, I mean, we saw Miazga did not look good the other night. He's a bit slow. I think that you need a guy that's a little bit faster next to John Brooks. So, I mean, I think any of those three guys definitely have a future. My one of my biggest takeaways is I'm just tired of seeing Tim Ream.
I like Tim Ream. I think he's a fine player. I just think we know who he is, and he's hit a ceiling. I mean, he's in his 30s. We know what who he is as a player, and I think there are just options that are exciting coming up. I think if I had to pick a World Cup squad, I would probably put him in there. He feels a little bit. I know Matt Beisler in the 2014 World Cup ended up being a standout player, but he feels like a similar type player who might not be flashy, but you know what you're going to get from him every game, and he's a veteran, he's a leader. But I don't think he should be in the starting 11 by any means.
So this kind of goes off a question from John in the chat, but as far as defense, what were your opinions, both Lucas and Ben, how do you feel about Dest on the left, Dest on the right? Are you a Dest Cannon guy or a Dest Robinson guy?
I like Dest a lot. If you told me like 2 years ago that we would have any player for Barcelona starting for the U.S. national team, I'd tell you you're insane. And Dest looks like that. He's comfortable at that level. I think he's one of the more talented players that we've seen come through the U.S. In a long time, or play for the U.S., obviously not come through the U.S. I think he's good enough that he can play on the left. And I think the real issue comes down to the fact that you have more good right backs than you do left backs. So I think while he's better on the right, the trade-off is just less. I would feel better starting Dest a little bit out of position if it means that you can get Reggie Cannon on the field, or even a guy like DeAndre Yedlin. If you have Dest on the right, you're looking at Robinson as possibly the starter, who I think he's a fine player. I just don't think he's shown that he's consistently capable of playing at that level. And if it's not Robinson, who are you looking at then? Like playing Tim Ream out of position, or like Sam Vines, who I think could grow into a decent player, but you just don't have as many options.
Or a Daniel Lovitz, but...
Well, just have to be asking this question about 2 years from now, right? And where will Anthony Robinson be 2 years from now in his development? And in a perfect world, I think you think Robinson on the left, Dest on the right in 2022, if everything works out as best as it possibly can for the U.S. back line, I would say those are your two starting fullbacks, would you not?
I mean, the way Reggie Cannon's playing at Boavista, I think, you know, in 2 years, he may be somewhere else by then. But I mean, he has made the step over from MLS and slotted in very quickly for that Boavista team. So, I mean, I think that he is in a better position to get better and to advance his, you know, his skills up and develop more so than what I've seen from Anthony Robinson.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it really comes down to, do you want a left-footed guy or a right-footed guy starting at left back? And I feel like a lot of times it's just weird seeing a right-footed player play on the left. But I think Dest is two-footed enough and he's good enough that he can make up for it. He's not going to be like Ashley Young and like every time he gets down to the touchline have to cut back and hit a cross in with his right. He can play a ball with his left. And I think we've seen Greg Berhalter before. He's fine playing kind of an inverted fullback. We saw that experiment with Tyler Adams. And so I think he can make it work. But I mean, I think the main takeaway for me is that there are plenty of options coming through. There's more talent than I think we've seen in years, probably since the early 2000s. And I think with the World Cup coming to the U.S. in 2026, I mean, there is a lot to be excited about. Guys, yeah. any final thoughts on the U.S. national team before we move on to our conversation with Joe?
Yeah, I'll real quick. I don't think Tim Weah is our best right wing player right now. I like Tim Weah a lot, but he's just got to play. I think it could be Gio Reyna that's out there. I mean, especially if Yunus Musah commits to the United States, then I want to see that McKennie Musah Adams midfield with Gio outright. But I don't know if it's Weah, but I think Weah has a place in this team because he can play all across the front three.
I'm biased because Weah's father is an AC Milan legend, George Weah. So I personally would love to see him representing the U.S. Manning the right wing spot. And isn't it funny with Musah? I constantly think about the parallel of a five-star recruit that's deciding between Georgia and Alabama right now with the way we're talking about him. You just said, Slape, if he commits to the U.S. And I can't remember the last time we had that type of conversation about a young player in the U.S. national team picture that we want so badly to represent because of what he can do for this midfield moving forward. But just another kind of exciting layer to add to the mix of this youthful team.
Yeah.
It can't hurt for him finishing with a 6-2 win. I know it was against Panama, but still, I mean, that has to go a little bit of a way to persuade him. Guys, we're gonna move on to our interview with Joe Lowry here, the U.S. national team drawing 0-0 with Wales and then winning 6-2 over Panama in their first games back in 8 months. We're going to talk to Joe Lowry here, and then after that, we will we'll preview the Inter-Miami match and take your questions. Happy to be joined by Joe Lowry. You have probably seen him on the MLS Assist podcast, which is, I'm not just saying this because he's here, but it's genuinely one of my favorite listens each week. If you're not listening, you should check it out. It's really good tactical breakdown of MLS as a whole. So Joe, I mean, just thanks for jumping on. First of all, I think this should be a fun conversation.
Yeah. And everybody, I didn't pay Ben to say those nice things about me. He really did say those all on his own. So Ben, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, I've really enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun. So yeah, thanks for putting it out there. I guess, first of all, so we're looking at Nashville SC, kind of recapping some of their regular season, and then looking ahead to their playoff match against Miami on Friday. Just overall, from what you've seen of Nashville, what would you say some like strengths, weaknesses of the team are?
I think Gary Smith, and I talked to Gary Smith before the season. This was back in maybe January, which feels like a lifetime ago at this point. But
years
I talked
ago.
To Gary Smith years ago. And one thing that he emphasized, and I think he's done well instituting into this squad, is defensive solidity. Talking about how he wants the team to be structured. And I think we've seen a very structured team from Nashville in most of this season. We've seen a solid defensive team who can close down passing angles, who's built around their square, the two central defensive midfielders and the two center backs. I mean, Walker Zimmerman just won Defensive Player of the Year, right? And we know, and I know you guys have talked about this over and over again, how good Dax McCarty and Anibal Godoy have been this season. That square of players with Romney as well in the back has been exactly what Nashville needed them to be this season. And I think it's a great move from them to build around those four guys, more or less. Obviously, there are other players who have come in and done those jobs over the course of a long weird season, but the spine of Nashville has been good, and that has filtered in and poured over into the rest of their defensive shape. And I've liked that from Nashville this season, playing mostly out of that 4-4-2 with a few variations here and there, but their structure defensively, Jordan loves to talk about this, my MLS Assist co-host. If you build a team that's solid defensively, you might not always be the most fun team to watch for 90 minutes after 90 minutes, but them finishing seventh in the Eastern Conference this year feels very fair given how they played.
Yeah, I mean, before the season, Mike Jacobs, the GM, I think he's kind of described his job a little bit as to under-promise and overperform. So I think he probably undersold some expectations going into the season, but he said his baseline expectation was to just be competitive in every game. And that if you looked at Nashville playing against whoever, you couldn't tell which one was the expansion team and which had been in MLS for X number of years. And I think just looking back at it, I can maybe think of a couple halves where they've been outplayed for the full 45 minutes, but I don't think they've ever really looked out of place or like completely played off the field in any game they've been in. And given some of the issues that we've seen with Minnesota, Cincinnati, I mean, even LAFC were beaten 5-0, I believe, a couple times in their first year. I think that's a pretty impressive feat.
Yeah, the approach that Nashville has taken, again, focusing on the defensive side, but also bringing in some real talent from within the league and outside of the league, that talent has meshed together fairly well. They all seem to be bought into the system that Gary Smith has them playing. There's a lot of things to like and to appreciate if you're a Nashville fan, especially looking forward to next season when things are hopefully a little more normal and we get that little bit of regularity game after game. But yeah, I mean, overall, a positive first season for Mike Jacobs, Gary Smith, and the rest of Nashville.
Yeah, so, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit there, just the weirdness that has been 2020, the condensed schedules. It's been pretty stop-start and hard to get a rhythm. I think that's probably impacted the performances we've seen from a guy like Hani Mukhtar and probably Randall Leal for long stretches, who were kind of brought in to be the difference makers in the attack. And we've seen the attack struggle, not just those two guys, but really the whole attack for, I would probably say, 2/3 of the season up until the home stretch when they picked up a little bit. From what you've seen of Nashville, what do you think have been some of the leading factors in just struggling to consistently score goals?
I think if you look at the roster, especially the roster they had before Yonder Cadiz came in, and I'm not sure how much of a consistent difference maker he's going to be, but I mean, early signs are largely positive. So setting that aside, looking at the attacking side of things, notice how I didn't really mention that when you hit me with that opening question. I focused on that square in the back and at the base of midfield. The attack had quality players. Daniel Rios is a guy who's done well in USL, which is a league that I'm fond of for a number of different reasons. But there are talented guys here, but they're not LAFC type of guys. They're not Atlanta United when they first came into the league type of guys, because that was never going to be what Nashville was doing. And you see the downside of that. You see the downside of not spending money. Money buys, for the most part, maybe Moneyball would disagree, but money buys, for the most part, good players if you're looking in the right places and looking for the right things. Nashville didn't didn't go after ridiculous pieces to put in the attack. I mean, Mukhtar has shown flashes this season, but I'm not sure that he is a consistent contributor and hasn't really been a consistent contributor this season. But he hasn't been the guy that you look to in the attack. And so then at that point, you're really left with Rendell Leal, who's turned it on, I think, especially at the end of this season. And then you see weird structural tweaks like putting, you know, Jones up top or off of that number nine,
right,
which I think has actually worked. And so Nashville may have stumbled their way into finding a sustainable attacking recipe, playing more direct. But I think ultimately the attacking struggles come down to the lack of real attacking difference makers going out there and performing game after game.
Yeah, and that's one thing I'm interested to see. You also just talked about next year and how it could be different. I'm interested to see what they do in the winter window. I think it all signs point to maybe some openings for MLS to go in and get some bigger players from Europe. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I mean, you're right. Hani Mukhtar was under $3 million. I think it was 2.9. So he's definitely on the low end of transfer fees for designated players. Rendell Leal almost went into the season just as a TAM player. I think he's a young DP, but he's easily able to be bought down. So I don't think we're seeing the same top end level of investment that we've seen from Miami or Atlanta or some of those other teams that we've seen come into the league and just not spend their way to success, but really invest heavily on the front end. Derek Jones, I think he's been a pretty interesting talking point this season. He's naturally, I would say, an 8, maybe a 6. Since he's been in Nashville, he's in the last half of the USL season, he was used as a 10. I think probably just to get him on the field since they had a pretty established midfield. And I expected him to kind of revert back to more of a, like an understudy maybe to Anibal Godoy. And he's played as just a straight up 10, playing kind of in a free role underneath a striker in a 4-4-2. What have you seen of him? And why do you think he's worked kind of playing out of position in that role?
It's a fascinating thing, right? I mean, I remember watching U20 World Cup games. That must have been 2017 with him in the midfield with Tyler Adams and Eric Williamson, I think, was on that team as well. But it's been interesting to watch Derek Jones's positional evolution, because I agree with you. I never thought the number 10 thing was going to stick. I never thought it was going to stick. I thought it was more or less, again, exactly what you said, just a reason to get him on the field in USL. And then I think because the central defensive midfielders for Nashville had been so good for so long this season, that to get him again back on the field in a position where he could make a difference, that number 10 spot was the spot. Maybe toss in some lack of production from the other attacking players like you and I already talked about. And you have an area for him to play, an area for him to get minutes as still a younger guy. That's important to his development, but it's also worked for Nashville. And so I think Gary Smith, again, may have found a really creative solution here. Having Derek Jones play off of the number nine is a very interesting thing to me, because it allows Nashville to play more direct in the attack, which has gone out of fashion, but is now, I think, coming back in fashion, because so many teams press, so many teams step their lines high up the field. It's easier to play over a press with a long ball than it is to play through a press. And if you're not LAFC, the odds that you're going to make your way through a press in Major League Soccer are pretty low if it's a half-decent press. And so Nashville has skipped that. They've said, okay, we're going to play long. That's fine. That can be who we are on a semi-regular basis. And having Derek Jones play off of Cadiz or off of Rios or off of whoever is playing as that number nine gives you another strong physical presence to give cover, to go up and chest the ball down, to head the ball down, and then allow Nashville to escape that pressure. So he's played not as a Mukhtar type 10 where he's going to create things necessarily with the ball at his feet, but he's a pressure release valve for Nashville to get forward, and he does the job really well.
Yeah, I think he and Mukhtar are clearly different players, but I think one thing that they both have in common is that they both command attention really well. Jones is just obviously he's a bigger player, but he's able to ride these challenges and pull 2-3 defenders to him and open pockets of space and really kind of open space for all of Nashville's attack, which is, I think, something that they've struggled. I mean, they're not a team, like you said, who are going to play through a press. They're not really going to break a ton of teams down like in a sustained period of possession. And I think having a guy like Jones who can free up other guys has really helped them out. In your last couple episodes of MLS Assist, you've talked about just some of the organization that's gone into how Nashville have played long balls, not necessarily just kind of lumping them up to the forward and hoping something happens, but you've talked about how they have like kind of a real structure to it. Can you break that down a little bit?
Absolutely. The thing I love about Nashville, or one of the things I really appreciate about what they do, is they do have a method to the madness. You think about just playing the long ball, and I think of two things. I think of, you know, English soccer in probably the 90s, and I also think of really bad youth soccer where there's parents on the sideline yelling, boot it. You know, we see that stuff too much probably. But Nashville, yes, they do move the ball high up the field, consistently, you know, playing long balls. But there is a reason, and there's a method to what they're doing. So they'll, let's say Walker Zimmerman is on the ball at center back, and he's playing a direct pass up to the number nine to get the ball over the defensive lines and into the attack, or at least over the midfield line. So then the number nine, the ball's coming to the number nine. Instead of Nashville letting that number nine be isolated on an island, they'll give that number nine Derek Jones. They'll give that number nine one of the wingers, or maybe one of the double pivots stepping forward. They'll have really good second ball structure so that when they do play direct, when they do play long, they'll have pieces there to pick up the ball. Because the odds that the number nine wins it, or maybe the ball's up to Derek Jones, the odds that that player is going to be able to win it, you know, with his back to goal and with pressure on his back, maybe even a guy in front of him, the odds are low, right? So give that player, give the receiver more help, as much help as you can, win the second ball and then transition quickly from there. I think Nashville do a really great job of that. And that's been one of my favorite things about watching them play that more direct style this season.
Yeah. And I think for me, I think that's kind of why I've been excited to see what Yonder Cadiz brings. Because I think he might not be a guy who scores 15 goals a season. I think that's probably a stretch, but I think he's definitely a guy who can hold the ball up well, and not just keep possession, but I think he can bring teammates into the attack. And I think if they're going to go for that kind of organized ball over the top structure, Daniel Rios is much more of a poacher and more of a natural finisher. And while he's a good hold up player, I don't think that's his strength. I think Dom Baggi was kind of brought in to be that guy, but it hasn't quite worked. And I think you're seeing just an improvement in that position from Cadiz. Part of that structure, I think, too, is just how they have Zimmerman and Romney, who are both able to break lines in possession. I think Zimmerman kind of gets that some of the headlines, and he's definitely more flashy carrying the ball out of the back, which I know you love. but Dave Romney, I think, has kind of been understated in his ability to break lines in possession. And really, he's been pretty key to what they do with the ball. What have you seen from those two, especially that help Nashville with the ball?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the center back plug there. I appreciate that. I love a good center back, especially an offensive-minded one, and Walker Zimmerman is that guy. He spent at least a few unintentional minutes, perhaps, as a number nine over the course of this year.
He may have been Nashville's best nine for the first couple weeks.
But it's fun. It's fun for me to see those kinds of guys. But looking at that pairing specifically, I number one, have been surprised with how good Dave Romney has been and how important he's been to this team. Coming over from the Galaxy, who I guess were just a tire fire anyway, especially at the back. So maybe that wasn't a fair representation of him as a player and his abilities. Seeing him in a strong defensive team has made him look so much better. And he has helped Nashville so much in the back, playing off of Walker Zimmerman. Like you said, Ben, I think you hit the nail on the head. Their offensive abilities are both solid, bordering on great, you know, somewhere in the above average range. Having Walker Zimmerman be able to play those line breaking balls, yes, on the ground, and again, accurate passes in the air, same thing more or less with Romney. I mean, it's two talented center backs that really are keying so many attacking sequences, because Nashville does rely on their defenders to play the ball forward into the attack, maybe not in the strictly modern sense where the ball's always on the ground breaking lines into an attacking midfielder who can then turn. It might be a little bit more direct, but you still need center backs who can reliably break the ball out of initial pressure, play it forward, and then help the team get forward from there. So yeah, I mean, Walker Zimmerman and Dave Romney have been essential to this team.
I think too, I would say one of the misconceptions I've seen about Nashville is that they're just a team who likes to put 10 players behind the ball and just sit and absorb pressure. And I think they do that at times, but I think there's been more to it than that. I think you've seen, especially when Baggi was the starting nine, kind of a press from them at times. Really the front line with Baggi and Mukhtar would press, and you'd see Godoy and McCarty pick up really good spaces to intercept the ball and go directly to goal. Do you think that's a fair assessment? And how do you think that's worked for them?
I do think that's a fair assessment, and it ties into one thing I said earlier. Everybody presses now, and even though Nashville has taken a more just a different attacking approach than we see a lot of other teams, even in MLS, take. They still do press sometimes, and they can use that as a great way to start transition attacks, because I think that is their offensive key. They want to break into space as quickly as possible. I mean, that's what everybody wants to do, really. And Nashville's approach to that is, yeah, sometimes we're going to play a 4-4-2 defensive block, get those players behind the ball, or get, you know, eight, nine guys behind the ball, and then we're going to win it and go quickly. Other times we're going to play out of pressure more over the top, or other times we're going to step our lines higher up the field and we're going to press. We have athletic guys in a lot of different spots on the field. We have really smart central midfielders. We're going to close off those passing angles. Our center backs and the rest of our back line are going to pinch forward, and we trust those center backs especially to deal with any runners that come their way. If you suffocate teams that way, then yeah, win the ball high up the field. That's half the distance now already to goal, and play from there. So I think the press has been not an overwhelmingly common thing from Nashville this season, but it is a weapon that they've used to create those transition attacks that they've become really dangerous in at least some moments.
So kind of looking forward, Inter Miami is coming up on Friday. They're a team who I would say have probably underperformed preseason expectations for sure. I think a lot of people looked at them and thought that they were going to be Atlanta United 2.0 just with the investment in young attackers that they've made. Gary Smith was quick to point out in their pre-match press conference earlier today that Nashville and Miami are not in the same position, and then in any regular season, Miami wouldn't be here. But just looking at them, what do you think some of their strengths and weaknesses are, and why have we seen them struggle to deliver on preseason expectations?
That's a fantastic jab from Gary Smith. I love that a lot. And he's right. And Nashville haven't been the team that I thought they were going to be, the team that I think a lot of people expected them to be this season. Some of the issues that they have, their midfield is slow. When it's Will Trapp and Blaise Matuidi in there, Matuidi is not the same guy that we saw for France in 2018 at the World Cup, playing that left-sided midfield, center midfield role. He has lost a lot of his bite and energy in midfield as he's aged. He's not the same player at this point. And then Will Trapp, we know from watching national team games, from watching him with the Crew in the past, good on the ball in a lot of instances, can ping that diagonal, but is not going to cover a lot of ground defensively. And so there's a moment etched in my mind. I think it was Red Bulls Inter Miami or maybe Orlando Inter Miami. Clearly, it's not that well etched in my mind. But I remember whoever it was splitting Montreal. Doesn't matter, but it was Montreal. It was a Montreal Impact attacker splitting right between Matuidi and Will Trapp and just breaking through those guys like a knife through butter. I mean, that for me has been a huge issue. They also have Victor Ulloa, but he's not been playing as much recently. It does seem to be that double pivot of Trapp and Matuidi for Diego Alonso. So I think that's problem number one. Problem number two for Nashville is that they've not been able to put the ball in the back of the net on a hugely consistent basis. Yes, Gonzalo Higuain is now a part of this squad, but he's not been hugely impactful. Not even really more impactful than Chicharito has been in, again, right, the Tire Fire, yeah, LA Galaxy right now. So the goals haven't been coming, and I don't think that's necessarily on Higuain, or it wasn't on Carranza, Robbie Robinson, or even Agudelo before that, playing as, or coming in and stepping in as the nine for Inter Miami. I think a lot of it has to do with the poor play of the attacking players around the number nine. Pizarro has shown well in large stretches of this season, but I think he really does, and I'm not the only person banging this drum. I think he needs someone to play with him. I think Inter Miami looked at their best when they had Lee Wynn on the roster before they shipped him off to New England.
Yeah.
I mean, when he had a creative partner, because Pizarro plays more on the wing for Mexico. He can do both jobs, and he can do both jobs well, and well enough at least. But Nashville have lacked that attacking, Inter Miami have lacked that attacking bite to pair with a really skillful number nine that they now have. So those two issues combined contribute to, I think, a team that has largely underperformed this season.
Yeah, it feels like, even Dax McCarty pointed this out too, on their pre-match conference, that he was using it more as a positive. I think it's a negative that Higuain has had to drop deep into midfield a lot to just not only just get involved, but try to pick up some of the slack in chance creation. I think he's been anywhere but inside the 18 yard box, trying to just get on the ball and make things happen, which is not what you want your goal scorer to do. I think there have been real issues with Miami just consistently giving him chances, or not just Higuain, but Pizarro, or not Pizarro, Robinson, or whoever's been playing up top against Nashville, who have clearly been one of the surprise solid defensive teams this season. How do you think that's going to play out?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because Inter Miami like to have the ball, but they don't love to have the ball. And Nashville like to have the ball, but they don't love to have the ball.
Yep.
And I think it's not going to look like a game of hot potato. One team will own segments of the game, and then the next team might take over some of the more dominant possession sequences. But it's going to be interesting. I'm so fascinated to watch the first 15, 30 minutes of this game to see which team ends up behind the ball, because I think that team is going to have an inherent advantage just because in a knockout tournament, in a playoff game like this, I think as much as you can try to attack in transition and attack on the break, play like France did at the 2018 World Cup, just without, you know, the, you know, 20 world-class players on their roster. But if you can play in that style that we saw from them, largely sitting deeper, pressing in moments, taking advantage of every turnover you can and going to goal quickly, I think that's the way to approach a lot of playoff games. That's definitely the way that Nashville, I think, will approach these games. And I'm pretty sure Miami will fall under that same umbrella. They have a couple bigger, more attacking names. Pizarro will play in this game. That was kind of reported earlier today. It's going to be a really, really strange matchup because neither team is going to want to dictate the tempo. But I think Nashville, honestly, is in a pretty good spot given their style of play. And I would say this not just against Inter Miami, but against almost any team in this postseason group.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I've felt. Nashville might not win the whole thing. I don't think they will, but I don't think they're a team that anybody wants to play either. I mean, looking past Miami, obviously it would take a good performance from them to move on. But looking at Toronto as the potential second round match, or I guess first round of the playoffs after the play-in match, I think Nashville matches up well with them. I think we've seen them go on the road to a place like Columbus where they lost 2-0, but for 65, 70 minutes, they were as good, if not better, than Columbus for long stretches. So I don't think they're an easy matchup for anybody. And I think the defensive structure that you've talked about kind of makes them maybe not a dark horse, but a team that's able to play spoiler and cause problems for some of the more favored teams.
Yeah, 100%. I'm totally with you there, Ben. That matchup, that potential matchup with Toronto would be a compelling one because Toronto does want the ball and Greg Vanney wants to break them down. And that makes for entertaining soccer if Toronto can carve through a lower defense, but it also presents a lot of opportunities for the defensive team to win the ball and then transition into space. Can I add one thing on the Inter-Miami matchup?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well?
Go for it.
I think this is a good game for Hani Mukhtar if he does see a significant number of minutes because, like I pinpointed, that double pivot for Nashville is pretty weak defensively. Having someone who can slalom through between those two players or around those two players or whatever it is, I think that could be a great opportunity. The same thing could be said for whoever's starting at left midfield and right midfield for Nashville. If those guys pinch in a little bit, tuck inside, maybe get on the ball and cut in, that could be a great opportunity to expose the limitations of those two Inter-Miami players. So that was just one more game plan sort of thing that I wanted to toss in there.
Yeah, I think we saw him, I mean, the Orlando match was his first time on the field in a month, and he played just 15 minutes and was far and away the best player on the field, goal and an assist. And I think getting him up and running and into form, 2 weeks of rest to get fully fit, I think will be huge. I think as Mukhtar performs, kind of Nashville FC will perform in the playoffs because, I mean, like you said, he hasn't been as influential as they would have liked, but I think he's shown in flashes just how important he can be to this team. And I think hopefully looking forward to 2021 with a more regular schedule and a full preseason time to get adapted, I think we'll see more from him, which kind of leads me into one of my last questions. Just looking forward, obviously still playoffs to go, but we're rounding towards the end of the season. What do you expect to see from this Nashville side in 2021? And what would be some areas that you would be looking to improve just from a roster standpoint?
Stylistically, I expect a very similar Nashville team. I think we'll see them continue to build on the strong foundation that Gary Smith has built, and that's a good thing. I think their identity is clear. They want to attack in transition. They want to be difficult to break down, and they want to step high at times. That identity is good overall. I mean, that's kind of an objectively solid plan to approach a soccer season with, and I don't see a reason to change that from Nashville. So then looking at the personnel side of things, there's room to both provide depth, and there's also room to provide maybe a quality attacker on the wing. I think maybe right wing could be a spot that where Nashville look to bring in a very good player. If they're looking to spend a little bit of money, you already bring in a number nine midway through this season in Yandere Cadiz, so that doesn't seem like a high priority to add another guy at that spot at an already crowded position on this roster. You've got Randall Leal, who's been bright at times this season on the left side of midfield. You've got a couple of different number 10 options that you and I have already gone over today. So then I look at the right side of midfield and think, if you have a game-changing type of player there, you are so difficult to beat because you absorb pressure defensively, mm-hmm. and then you have a stable of quality attacking guys, maybe led by that new acquisition on the right wing, if that does happen. That, for me, is probably the best reality if you're a Nashville fan or a part of this organization. That would make them even more difficult to play against than I think they already are.
Yeah, I think probably, I would guess that before the season, they were hoping that that would be David Akam. And for, I mean, he's just picked up injuries at really frustrating points throughout the season. So I don't think it hasn't panned out like that by any means. I'm interested to see what they do in midfield. I know Godoy and McCarty have been really strong. But I mean, at the same time, McCarty's 33, Godoy's 30. And while you have guys like Anunga who have really, really impressed this season after USL, I kind of wonder if they're going to spend a little bit of money in center midfield and maybe bring in a young guy who could potentially grow into a bigger role and be sold on. Because I think that's really what they're trying to do, is be a, maybe not as flashy as Atlanta, but that same kind of model where they can find guys under the radar from South America, Central America, and eventually sell them on. And I think that's probably just where MLS is going as a whole. Before we let you go, just let our viewers know where we can find your stuff, what you have going on. I know we've talked about MLS Assist, but if you want to give a little bit of more info on that, I think they would love that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me first on Twitter. That's probably the best place to go, at Joe C. Lowry. So that's my username. I just changed it, so I had to really enunciate it there to make sure I didn't mess up. But you can find me on Twitter, and there'll be links to whatever I'm working on over there. But yeah, MLS Assist is a podcast that Jordan Angeli and I started way back in January, now again years ago, Ben, where we go through and break down a lot of the soccer that happens on the field in Major League Soccer and talk about why things happened, not just talking about the things that happened, but getting into the nitty gritty details of at least why we think things may have happened. So we've had some good interviews there this year, Luchi Gonzalez, Yohan Dame, who's a really interesting story for FC Cincinnati, even though they have been, I just like the term tire fire today, apparently, but that also applies to them just as it does the Galaxy. But that's been a really fun project that Jordan and I have been working on this year. So if you support us and listen to us, that would be great. And then, yeah, I've also been stepping in some difficult circumstances with the Total Soccer Show, and I will continue to be a part of that in the near future. I'm working with Taylor on things there, doing Soccer 101 episodes and appearing there every once in a while. So if you are interested in hearing more of my voice, that is another great spot to go.
Well, man, thanks for coming on. We've talked about this for a while, but it's fun to finally do this. I appreciate your info. And yeah, like you said, definitely go check out definitely MLS Assist and Total Soccer Show. That's been fun to hear you on there as well. And thanks for matching too. I know that was planned.
Oh yeah, definitely a planned twinning from Ben and I. Dude, thank you for having me on. Seriously, I really do appreciate it.
This was a blast, man. Take care. Well, hey, everybody, thanks again to Joe Lowry for jumping on and talking with us. That was a fun conversation. And I mean, I said it on our interview with him, but if you're not listening to the MLS Assist podcast already, you should. It's some of the best tactical breakdown around the league. And as someone who just enjoys watching soccer, I have a blast listening to it. And I think you will, too. So, yeah, we are back. We're ready to preview the Nashville Inter-Miami match. I have traded in my Heineken 0.0 for coffee. Davey gets a lot of grief for drinking Coors Light, and I figured I had to one-up him. So, yeah, that's the Heineken 0.0. Guys, some more info coming out on the positive cases that we've seen from Miami. Jeff Carlisle reporting that it was from earlier in the week, potentially Sunday or Monday. So, I mean, again, it's still a developing story, but it sounds like it could be more contained than we initially thought. But looking at this matchup, it's a matchup that Nashville has had the better of. They've met twice this year. Nashville won 1-0 and then got a 0-0 draw. And now with Miami missing players, having to travel to Nashville, how do you guys think this one plays out? Salip, I'm gonna throw it to you first.
No, I was gonna say real quick. I was just gonna say that just another shout out for MLS Assist. It's a podcast that I really enjoy. Go check out Jordan and Joe did a quick in like 40 minutes. They previewed every playoff team, which was pretty impressive to get through. I guess that's, 18 teams. So go check that out. Check out MLS Assist. Looking at this team, I know that we've talked about this all year long, is that Miami and Nashville are forever linked because they're expansion teams that have been, given different tags. Miami's been the sexy attacking team, whereas Nashville's just the boring defensive team. But, looking at the stats, it's a bit different than what you would have. Miami has scored one more goal than Nashville. They've conceded 13 more goals than Nashville. While they both get different tags, as Miami gets the attacking talent, it's clear that Nashville has been just as good in the attack and better at defense. And I think that's just where this game is going to come down to it as we kind of start to dive into the nitty-gritty of this game.
Yeah, and we've talked about it all season, right? About how Nashville has kind of been the antithesis of how Miami was built. And look, Nashville's been the more balanced team. It's been the more consistent team, more structured, and honestly, the more explosive team. Slape, you mentioned Miami's only scored one more goal, just in terms of all the goals combined for the season. But especially late in the year, Miami scored 3 goals in one match once in the regular season, and that was back in August. Nashville has scored 3 or more goals in one match 4 times since August 22nd, I believe, when Miami did it, when I looked at it. So, look, Nashville has had the better end product, honestly, for the last 2-3 months. And, look, I think Nashville should expect to win this game. You mentioned the two matches, Ben, a scoreless draw, a 1-0 win, didn't allow a goal in 180 minutes of play. I think Nashville should expect to advance based on the sample size that we have from this season. Miami is not a side to be feared at this point for Nashville fans, like it might have been on those first couple of matches with the big sexy approach that they took to building this team. Nashville's the better team, quite honestly. And I think falling short on Friday should be viewed as disappointment in their eyes.
Yeah, and also these two teams do look a bit different than the last time we played. Blaise Matuidi got his first start against in that second match against Nashville, but Gonzalo Higuain had yet to be signed.
Yeah.
Yonder Cadiz had yet to be signed. We have guys like, Breck Shea. On the Miami side, Breck Shea hadn't really gotten any opportunities at that point, but he's got 4 goals this season, which is pretty surprising. Randall Stoke Leal.
Legend.
Yeah, Stoke City legend. Randall Leal was not scoring in the way that he was. He wasn't getting the assists that he is now. This team, both teams, look a bit different from where they did when they last faced off. But, I think that Nashville definitely has the edge, especially in the midfield. I know Joe touched on this a bit. It's been touched on a couple different places, but, what Nashville can offer in the midfield when you have guys like Anibal Godoy and Dax McCarty. I think they just match up so much better than Will Trapp and Blaise Matuidi.
And I think it's...
Oh, go ahead, Lucas. Sorry.
Sorry, I just wanted to butt in. I think it is worth noting the way that these two teams ended the season. And maybe this would have more of an effect if the playoff game happened a few days after that regular season finale. But I don't know. I don't want to understate the importance of how Nashville finished out with the 3-2 win over Orlando, scoring 2 goals in the dying moments and winning a shootout victory against one of the best teams in MLS. Now, Miami ended the year on a good note, 2-1 win, although it was Cincinnati, but they had lost their 2 matches before then. And so I think that right there is huge. Now, we mentioned off the top, it feels like it was ages ago, but just the confidence that this team is playing right now, I think, is much more so than Miami, not just individually with players like Leal and Cadiz, who's clearly getting more comfortable, but just top to bottom, I think Nashville's the more confident team right now, and they should be.
Yeah, going to Orlando, who hadn't lost at home, and like you said, Lucas, they're one of the best teams, not just in the conference, but in the entire league. I think we'll see how it plays out. It was 2 weeks ago. It feels like a long time ago, especially coming off the international break.
Yeah.
But even if momentum doesn't carry through, they'll at least have the confidence knowing that they can play with anybody in the league at this point. I wanted to throw it out to Jeff Reuter, who had a piece at the Athletic where he looked at Mike Jacobs' approach to building a roster. And I thought one of the things he said in that piece and in his interview with the Nashville Soccer Show was interesting. Where he said that expansion teams usually put most of their money into scoring goals, where Nashville just decided that they were going to spend their money on defensive players like Walker Zimmerman, for the most part. I mean, there have been exceptions, but they've established a really strong defense that'll keep them in games. We've seen that all year. And I think it's a shame that we didn't see them play in the MLS's back tournament, because I feel like I would have a better idea of what to expect from them in the playoffs after a tournament like that. But just from what we've seen in the regular season, they're going to keep games close. They're going to be in games late. They're not going to get blown out. And I think with their defense, they're not going to be the favorites in probably any game besides this game tomorrow. And if they advance from that, I think they could cause problems for lots of teams. They're not going to be really afraid to go anywhere. And I don't think there's a team in MLS that will be happy to see them come to their stadium. So I think getting a win tomorrow, I don't think it's going to define success for their season by any means, but I think it could set them up to potentially play spoiler down the road.
Yeah, and I think another thing that has kind of been overlooked a little bit when comparing these two teams as we're going into the playoffs, Gary Smith has been here. Gary Smith has coached playoff soccer in MLS. Diego Alonso, as good as a coach he is and his experience in South America, has not. And there's a bit difference between, you know, these single game knockout game tournament and a league season. And I think Nashville, you know, Jeff touched it on the Nashville Soccer Show, but, you know, having a defense that can keep you there in a game, you'll always be around and be able to make life difficult for people.
Another thing, too, is we haven't seen all three DPs on the field at the same time.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's crazy. We're in November, mid-November at this point, and we haven't seen all of them at the same time. I don't know if we will, at least off the start tomorrow. Randall is coming back from international duty. He will be available thanks to the charter flights. He's going to skip the quarantine period. So I think for me, that's something to keep an eye on to see how involved he is if he gets the start coming off of an international match and then a flight across the Atlantic Ocean. It'll be interesting to see if he gets to the start, but I think having three designated players available, I mean, that just gives Nashville a leg up from the last time that they played Miami for sure.
Yeah. And Lucas, I'll ask you this because Ben and I have argued this and are probably on different sides. Who do you start at the number nine position tomorrow?
Has Cadiz started a game yet for Nashville?
No, he has not.
Then I don't know that you give him that first start in this playoff game. I think you stick with what's been working, right? With Rios at the nine, and perhaps Cadiz makes a second half performance if he's needed. I don't know if you mess with the way that you ended the season strong. If you're Nashville, I'm curious what sides were you guys on, because I think you start
so, with Rios. Yeah, I've said that I think Rios gets the start. I'm not saying I think he should. I just, to me, Cadiz hasn't looked like he's been fully fit. And I know it's been 2 weeks and maybe he's gotten some more work and getting closer to match fitness.
It feels like it might be a gamble.
Yeah, it feels like a gamble.
The team has built a team around.
I feel like with a fully healthy Rios and a fully healthy Cadiz, you probably go with Cadiz. I think Rios has been getting the start, probably because he's just in better fitness than Cadiz. The flip side to that is that he's come off at halftime because apparently he's still carrying a groin injury. But yeah, I just haven't seeing Cadiz look fit enough to get the start, and that could change.
So here's where I'm at. So Yonder Cadiz has been given more and more time through the last three games of the regular season. Against Orlando, he got 45 minutes, so that was the longest that he has gotten. I think there is no other time than a must-win playoff game. If your DP number nine is not starting that game, like, why did you bring this player in? I know that the qualities that Rios brings, and I know how well he has performed, but I think this is the opportunity that you have to, if you think that that Yonder Cadiz is the guy, you have to give him this game. And we've seen, you know, with Mukhtar and Cadiz on at the same time, what they've been able to do. Imagine what they could do both fresh with a fresh Randa Leal. So I think there is, I have it in the preview that'll come out tomorrow. I think Cadiz starts. But I also, that is what I would do. But I think that Gary Smith does as well.
And to be fair, I think starting Cadiz and bring Rios off the bench is not a bad place to be in. I think probably Rios is going to be more of an impact sub next year with Cadiz getting to start most of the matches. So I think that's a good place to be in. And I think in the playoffs, I think we've seen Rios look really good coming off the bench, especially. So I think that could be a winning formula. I think.
Well, let me put the question this way: Who would provide more of a spark coming off the bench in the second half, picking between the two?
I would say Rios, just because he's going to have more space to work in the box against tired defenders. I think Cadiz is kind of a guy who can break down defenses or play more physically with defenses from the start, and he'll open up space for Nashville when the game's a little bit more crowded. I think you bring Rios on in the 70th minute with 20 minutes to go, and when the game is a little bit more open, I think that could play into his favor.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, Rios makes a bit more of an impact off the bench, even though Cadiz has. But I think that there's enough guys also off the bench too, which we saw in the press conference and also on the injury report. One of Donald Hall from Paradise Pod's favorite players, David Akam, is off of the injury report. And judging from kind of what I took with what Gary Smith said was that he may not be a factor in this game, but, you know, against Toronto could be a factor. But you have him, Handwala, Buana, guys like that who are able to make that impact off the bench.
So here, this leads into one of my last questions I have. Randa Leal, obviously we talked about him coming back from international duty. He may be able to start. If he doesn't get the start, what do you think Gary Smith does to shift things around and factor for that? Lucas, I'll toss it to you first.
Well, and quite honestly, I was going to ask you, Ben, about the David Akam situation. And Gary Smith said in the press conference that, you know, if he is able to get back to match sharpness, if they move forward in the playoffs, he'll be an option. To you, does that totally eliminate the possibility of seeing Akam on Friday?
I don't think it completely eliminates it, but Gary Smith didn't seem very confident that he would play. He definitely said as the playoffs go on, he would become more of a factor. He said he's only trained for 4 or 5 days after about 2 months off.
So the question is, if Leal is not back to fitness or not able to start, then what does Nashville do?
Yeah, and I would say probably, I think it comes down to Derek Jones at the 10 and pushing Mukhtar wide.
Yeah, Mukhtar ride white, and then
a guy like Buana. What would you do?
I think that I'm a Derek. What I would do is probably start Buana. What I think Gary Smith will do is we'll push Mukhtar out wide and bring in Derek Jones. I like Derek Jones later in the game. I don't know if I would, even this game specifically, if I'd want to see him from the beginning, but I like him, his ability to drive at a back line, a tired back line off the bench. I think is an asset that you would want to, you know, keep in your back pocket.
Are we saying this with the assumption that it would be Moyle on the left wing?
I think at this point Moyle's kind of a lock.
He's earned that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think if it was me, I would probably start Buana, like Slape said, but I feel like if Leal doesn't go, it's probably going to be Mukhtar, Moyle, and Derek Jones kind of. I mean, we've even seen Jones kind of rotate out to a wide position. It can be a pretty fluid line, but yeah, I think that's probably what Gary Smith does. The other thing to consider, Anibal Godoy has been back in training for a few days. If he isn't fit and isn't able to go from the start, are you guys confident in Brian Anunga holding down that position in a playoff game?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Based on what we've seen, absolutely. There's no evidence to tell us we shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has been one of the storylines of the season. I'm sure we're going to get into it after Nashville is done with the playoffs, whenever that is, when we do some.
And I'm surprised we haven't seen recaps. More of him.
I think he's been one of the success stories of the season. Alistair Johnson has kind of gotten some of the headlines, and rightly so. But, I mean, Anunga has stepped in to fill some pretty big shoes in midfield and hasn't looked at all out of place, and I think could potentially develop into a starter in a couple of years. So, I mean, Yeah, it was more of a rhetorical question, but I don't think there's anything to worry about with him there. Final question before we close this out, guys. Do you have any score predictions? How do you think the match is going to play out tomorrow?
I'll go ahead. 3-1. I think the Nashville is going to get a 2-goal lead. I think it'll be 2-1 at one point, and then at that point when Miami is pushing for a late equalizer, I think Nashville's able to get one on the break.
Yeah, I have 2-0 Nashville. Mike Jacobs and co have done such a good job of raising the floor for this team all season and before, and that bodes very well in the postseason. And that's why we were so excited to see Nashville and MLS is back, right, in Orlando. How will this team do in a knockout setting? Well, now we're going to have that question answered. And I think what they've done to raise the floor with the solidity on defense is going to do enough to frustrate Miami. I don't think they find the back of the net for the third time that they play. I think there'll be a zero on that end, and I think Nashville does enough in the final third. I have supreme confidence right now in Nashville SC for the short term right now for Friday. I think it's a 2-0 win.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I initially said 2-1 when we did our predictions for Slape's preview. But now with the news that Miami is going to be missing three starters, they're not an incredibly deep team anyway. I think it's unfortunate for them, but it just plays into Nashville's favor a bit. I'm going to say 2-0 as well. Guys, final thoughts?
No, I mean, I'm just looking forward to the game tomorrow if it does go through. Big thanks to Joe for, you know, sitting down with you, Ben. I got a chance to listen to it now for a second time, but really enjoyed what he had to say and bring to the table. But, you know, I got very excited for tomorrow, very confident, and, you know, just hopefully we get to see this team play.
Yeah, great stuff from Joe, really. And anybody that likes soccer in any form or fashion, whether it's MLS, European soccer, needs to go listen to Total Soccer Show. But look, I mean, it's been a bumpy ride, right, in 2020. It's been quite a year in this inaugural season. And now this first playoff matchup is happening tomorrow night. I can't wait. This team is confident. I think they get off to a strong start. I'm looking forward to it.
Guys, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks, Slape and Lucas, for joining us, for helping us out tonight. You can follow Jonathan at JSlapeSSP on Twitter. Lucas is just his name, Lucas Panzica, and I'm Ben Wright. You can find our written coverage of Nashville SC on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. Make sure to check out a Speedway Soccer podcast. This will be on our feed tomorrow morning. You can also listen to the Nashville Soccer Show on Wednesday nights on 104.5 The Zone. Guys, we will be back tomorrow with more coverage of the Nashville SC Inter-Miami match. Thanks for sticking with us, and we'll see you next time.